This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
UNICEF last week made an urgent appeal for $8 million United States dollars in funding to meet the immediate and medium-term needs of women and children in flood-affected areas.
That's Lamek Masina reporting from Blantyre. Details coming up. Also, a coach and players from the university club in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon were abducted by suspected separatists. And reports indicate Boko Haram militants have killed at least 23 Chadian soldiers. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the death toll from Cyclone Idai in southeastern Africa continues to rise. There are now more than 600 dead in Mozambique, Malawi and Zimbabwe, and rescue workers expect to find more bodies in the coming days. Hundreds of thousands of people remain displaced by floodwaters, and the world is rushing aid to the battered region. The World Food Programme is coordinating international aid efforts. The World Health Organization is warning of the threat of illnesses caused by tainted water, while the United Nations is making a global appeal for aid funds. In southern Malawi, where at least 56 people died in the storm, relief supplies are beginning to arrive. The United Nations says about 1,200 Mozambicans fled across the border to evacuation camps in Malawi, where relief supplies are under strain. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's Department of Disaster Management and Preparedness says nearly a million people in half of the country's districts have been impacted by Cyclone Idai. Half of them are children. Heavy rains and flooding from the cyclone spread into neighboring Malawi and Zimbabwe after pounding Mozambique earlier this month. Hundreds of Mozambicans have fled the destructive waters by crossing the border into Malawi to stay at evacuation camps. Andrew Brown is the chief of communications in Malawi for the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund.
The situation in the camps is quite bad. Actually, right now, I'm in Bangula Admak camp in Masanji, and there's over 4,000 people here. There's 3,400 Malawians and actually 1,200 Mozambicans who have crossed the river. Resources are stretched.
UNICEF partners, including Doctors Without Borders, the Red Cross, United Purpose, and World Vision, are helping deliver relief supplies. Brown says these include oral rehydration solution, antibiotics, and insecticide treated bed nets.
We are also providing water buckets, making sure they have access to clean water, making sure that children are screened for malnutrition and treated. We're training and providing temporary teachers to help with the increased number of children. And we're creating child-friendly spaces, and we have recreation kits so that kids living in these very crowded camps actually have somewhere safe to go and play.
UNICEF last week made an urgent appeal for $8 million United States dollars in funding to meet the immediate and medium-term needs of women and children in flood-affected areas. Authorities say some areas of Malawi, like Nyachikadza and East Bank, are inaccessible due to cut-off roads and washed-away bridges. District Commissioner for Sanje, Rehad Chavula, says getting aid to those in need is a challenge.
We had the help of a helicopter. We were able to send the help through the helicopter. But then still, what we need is the roads to be maintained. Otherwise, we can't have the helicopter all the time.
Chavula says thousands in Malawi are still in need of shelter, food and medical assistance. Malawi President Peter Mutharika declared 14 affected districts disaster areas and appealed for help. Aside from aid groups and the UN, countries offering assistance including Britain, China, Tanzania, and the United States. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Zimbabwean officials estimate about 20,000 households were affected by Cyclone Idai, which hit southern Africa last week. So far, the government says nearly 1,000 homes were destroyed, but it expects that preliminary number to rise as the recovery effort continues. Zimbabwe, like neighboring Mozambique and Malawi, is slowly getting to grips with the cyclone's economic damage. Adi Gando gives us more on the story.
Though the level of destruction in Zimbabwe is less extensive than in neighboring Mozambique, it is substantial. The governments in Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi say Cyclone Idai has killed more than 600 people. Thousands of people are missing, and officials fear that once the flood waters subside, the death toll will rise. Thousands of homes, buildings, and farms have been destroyed, and flooded roads and bridges have cut off some communities. The economic impact of the cyclone within the region is estimated to run into billions of dollars lost in terms of damage to property and infrastructure. Zimbabwe is landlocked and it relies on the Mozambique port of Beira for imports of basic goods such as grain and fuel. But almost all of Beira city is flooded now, and many of the roads used to ferry goods inland are submerged. This means that Zimbabwe must find alternative routes for its imports. The Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe, GMAZ, has told members of parliament that wheat imports are stranded in Beira. Garikai Chawanza is with the Grain Millers Association.
It's true that there are some over 100 trucks which are in Beira, which is supposed to come to Zimbabwe, but they are being held in Beira because of the road networks which are destroyed by cyclone. That which we stopped in Mozambique sometime last.
The Millers Association imports grain on behalf of millers throughout the country. The country imports about half of the 400,000 tons of wheat it needs each year. The Millers Association says it will seek alternative routes for imports via Maputo. The damage to Beira's port may take months to repair, and that could add to Zimbabwe's economy. Wars. Busisi Moyo is the chief executive of United Refinery, an oil pressing giant.
Yes, it's true that there will be an effect. If Beira is closed, there's a lot of raw materials that we get through Beira port. We have edible oils, cooking oil. There is huge infrastructure for crude soybean oil that are set up in Beira. So if we don't have a functional Beira route, it will affect raw materials. We get soap raw materials from that port or through that port, and then through Mutare. We get crude oil from there and other raw materials, PET plastic that come from China or from India through Beira port. So it does have an impact on business. And we trust that the responsible authorities, and both on the Mozambican side and on the Zimbabwean side, will quickly attend to open that route. It just doesn't affect Zimbabwe. It also affects Zambia. Zambia is also affected by that. Malawi is also affected.
The government has been hoping to use agricultural imports to help turn the battered economy around. But flooding following the cyclone in hit areas where villagers had been developing crops such as bananas and avocados. The cyclone-affected region includes Chipinge, home of the Tanganda Tea Estates, which is one of Zimbabwe's top exporters and employers. The impact to the environment due to the gully erosion caused by the floods will affect agriculture within the area. Analysts say that enterprises such as Tanganda have been pivotal in earning Zimbabwe much-needed foreign currency. They say the cyclone's real impact is yet to be felt for a country already struggling under a protracted economic crisis and what its government alleges are punitive sanctions by the West. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Soccer clubs in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon are relocating to safer areas after a coach and players from a university club were abducted by suspected separatists. The military says it has arrested at least 10 suspected kidnappers, but players say the abductions show the government is unable to protect its citizens. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the town of Bamenda.
These are players of Bang Bullet Football Club of Nkambe, a second division team training in Kwen, a neighborhood in Cameroon's English-speaking northwestern town of Bamenda. Team manager Ndi Eugene says the squad abandoned its base in Nkambe, 160 kilometers to the north, when some players were taken hostage by separatists and the team president threatened for taking part in Cameroon's soccer competitions.
We started reading trauma in players and in coaches. It's not easy what we have in Cambe as a fan base, what we have as community support and everything. We cannot have it in Bamenda, but we'll continue with the game. Football knows no politics, so football should rather be used to get us all together.
Even in Bamenda, a town they consider safe, the team has continued to receive threats, they said. The danger was made clear this week when Dumbe Bosso, the head coach of Young Sports Academy team, was abducted by separatists and released fewer than 24 hours after. On Wednesday, 20 students of the University of Boya football team in the English-speaking Southwest region were kidnapped, severely tortured and released 24 hours after their kidnapping. Football associations in the English-speaking regions say activity has fallen by 75%, with at least 60 teams not playing. Many fans fear to go to pitches. In a statement circulated on social media, people claiming to be separatists warned teams from the northwest and southwest not to participate in championships organized by the central government in Yaoundé. They also asked teams from the 8 French-speaking regions of Cameroon not to play any matches in the 2 English-speaking regions. Deben Chofo, governor of the northwest region, tried to assure the public that enough security is in place to protect all citizens and the players. He did, however, call on people to help the government by reporting suspected separatists. Sports analyst and former player Jean-Pierre Ekoto explains why the separatists target football teams.
Au Cameroun, le football est un sport que la population aime.
He says the separatists know that in Cameroon, sports, especially football, is a very popular game that unites so many people, and stopping it by kidnapping players may push many people, both English and French speakers, to revolt. And the international community will add pressure to the government to pay more attention to solving the crisis in the restive regions. The separatists launched a campaign in 2016 to win independence for the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
Chadians with security ties today said Boko Haram militants have killed at least 23 Chadian soldiers. Reports indicate a night raid took place in the town of Dangandala, near the shore of Lake Chad, in the southwestern part of the country. One security source told Reuters that the attackers are believed to have crossed the border from Niger. The attack would be the deadliest incident inside Chad involving Boko Haram, which is based in Nigeria. Eighteen past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Somalis and other East Africans have made Winnipeg, the capital of the central Canadian province of Manitoba, a destination after fleeing their homes and sometimes after leaving the United States. In our final segment of the series, Taking Flight, VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young went to Winnipeg to meet the Somali community there and learn why this city has become their new home.
Almost 700,000 people live in Winnipeg, a growing number of them from East Africa, including Somalia. This is one gathering place for Somalis, the Genuine Restaurant. It's not just for the food, it's where newcomers become part of the community. Laban Shihadi paid a truck driver $1,500 to slip him into Winnipeg from the United States about 10 years ago. Since then, he has been working on becoming a Canadian citizen.
When I get to Winnipeg, I went to the immigration, the folks' office. Then when I filled my application, first I get denied. but they give me a work permit and they say like it's like same like United States, like temporary protected. You know? They give me something called pre-removal risk. So nobody can deport you back to your country until your country is going to be settled.
Shehadi gained permanent resident status in Canada and then brought his wife and daughter here from the United States. The Canadian of Somali ancestry says Winnipeg offers immigrants camaraderie and support. Abdi Salam Assad.
We have community centers that they can go to, such as Bilal Masjid in the northern area here. We have the Waverly Masjid, and also streets like this, like Sargent, where you can go up and down the street and everyone is warm, everyone is comfortable, and it's a lot better of a vibe, if I can use that word, for the people that do come in. It's not a tough city at all. We're Canadians by nature, so we're naturally polite. We're naturally kind-hearted people. So really, we try and help them as much as we can.
At the Winnipeg Islamic Center, Imam Mughaddin Sheikh Omar says that the mosque also helps settle newcomers.
These people, most of them, are experiencing in the beginning a higher level of stress. So it is for their mental well-being and of social health, it's so good for them to get that connection, to feel sense of security, and that opens the doors of many opportunities for them. For instance, housing. They may get some friends to help them live with them or rent with another friend. And job opportunities.
From a troubled homeland, Somalis and others have found a new life and a sense of belonging in this city in the middle of the Canadian Plains. And as immigration problems cause more to leave the United States and other places, Winnipeg's immigrant diaspora grows. Jeffrey Young, VOA News, Washington.
Uganda on Thursday inaugurated the China-built Isimba hydropower dam in the country's east. The $568 million dam is expected to improve access to power in Uganda, where less than 30% of the people are on the grid, and cut power costs. But as Halima Atumani reports from Kayunga, the dam is not without controversy and has come at a price for the local people as well as for the ecology.
At the shores of Victoria Nile River, local women do their laundry, bathe and collect water for use at home. It is for many locals their only source of water, but soon their gatherings here will no longer be possible. Upstream, the just-completed $568 million Isimba hydropower dam crosses four districts in eastern Uganda, including theirs. Four men are busy digging a fence to close access to the river. It is a river that families depend on, says local resident Diana Namuli. She says their children would swim whenever they want, but that's not going to be possible. As a mother, I would send my child to fetch water, says Namuli. That's not going to be possible. They open the water 24 hours and this place floods, she says. The dam constructed by China International Water and Electric Corporation will increase electricity access to the less than 30% of Ugandans who have it and cut power costs. But it has come at a price for the local ecology as well. Before the dam, this Uganda part of the Nile River brought tourists to its waterfalls and wildlife. Visitors came here to see red-tailed monkeys and endangered pangolins, among others. At the official launch of the dam Thursday, officials acknowledged choosing 183 megawatts of clean power over access to water and natural beauty. Simon Kasiate is spokesman for the Uganda Electricity Generating Company.
It's been a delicate balance for government, but we have to make that choice. And therefore, with the coming in place of this hydropower station, it meant that, of course, would disrupt the social setting up of the communities around. Where someone walked to their little jerrycan and fetched water off a stream, now you have got a reservoir, which is a lake. Where someone simply walked through and crossed to visit the Akith and Kin across the river, now we have a hydropower station that has its own restrictions because of the safety nature and the safety considerations that we put around.
Critics say China's infrastructure projects in Africa increase Beijing's influence on the continent, along with African debt. China's ambassador to Uganda, Zeng Zhuqiang, calls the allegations groundless.
On the contrary, in pursuing cooperation, China values sincerity, friendship, and equality. pursue common interests, win-win cooperation, and put friendship first.
In addition to the Isimba Dam, China is also financing the $2 billion US dollar 600-megawatt Karuma hydropower dam in northern Uganda. Once active, the two hydropower dams will nearly double Uganda's power supply. Uganda's future generations will see if the electricity is worth the cost. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kayunga, Uganda.
South Sudan became the latest country to ban skin bleaching products in January, joining Cote d'Ivoire, Rwanda, South Africa, and Ghana. But as Ayan Dieng Bior explains, banning these products in some countries seems to be doing little to stifle their use.
South Sudanese activist Nimal Tudil, who has dark skin, was pressured by peers to bleach her skin to a lighter tone when she was in high school. She says she knew better.
In our community, they often say that, you know, just lighten yourself a little bit. You'll just be so much prettier if you just, you know, open up a little bit, just brown it. People are like, you know, I have this lotion, it only has 2% hydrocodone. I'm like, yeah, I'm okay.
Her home country, South Sudan, announced a ban on skin bleaching products in January, with officials citing health concerns. Some skin lightening products have hydroquinone, corticosteroids, and mercury, some of their main ingredients which can be harmful to your health. Symptoms can include mercury poisoning, kidney failure, and cancer. South Sudan follows other countries that have banned harmful products. In 2016, Ghana's Food and Drugs Authority declared skin bleaching a public safety issue and banned products containing hydroquinone, a toxic skin lightening agent. Rwanda's health ministry announced in January that it would enforce a ban on skin bleaching products, and the ministry's director of cancer unit, Francois Uwinkindi, says it's part of a multifaceted effort to curb their use.
We are now putting much efforts, like educating people, going around and selling those illegal products. So you can say that we are also joining those other countries that are also in this fight of the use of those skin-lightening cosmetics.
But Kigali resident Sifa Gaudence is defying the ban, saying she will find alternative ways to purchase them.
I'm very sad that these products have been banned. We'll just use what's locally available, but people who made that decision need to know that these products make a woman feel beautiful.
Another Kigali resident, Agne Amiwana, echoes those remarks. She says she has been lightening her skin for 7 years to make herself more attractive to her husband, who prefers light-skinned women.
If I don't have these products, I'm afraid I'll become too dark like I used to be. I still have a few products left, but I hate the thought of becoming darker.
Tutdale says skin bleaching is a symptom of widespread discrimination against people on the basis of the shade of their skin tone. Some say this issue, referred to as colorism, has unfairly targeted darker-skinned people across the continent.
Black is not just one thing. Black is different shades. We could be as light as an albino person and as dark as I am. And that's a beautiful thing.
She says people should not change themselves, but should try to change the system that discriminates against dark-skinned people. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.